Hello and welcome to the very first episode of the ARC Finance Affording Energy Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Neidel. In each episode of our new series, we'll talk with different innovators and thinkers from the realms of commerce, finance, and public policy who, in very different ways, are making modern energy more affordable, reliable, and accessible for the billions worldwide that currently live without it. Today, we'll speak with Fiza Farhan, Chief Executive Officer of the Buksh Foundation, a young microfinance institution based in Lahore, Pakistan. In our conversation, we discuss the growth and early success of the organization's Clean Energy Loan Initiative. Fiza argues that Pakistan's current energy crisis and its impact on micro and small enterprises has made energy lending simply too important for the MFI to ignore. We also gain insight into why and how the Buksh Foundation made its unconventional commitment to not only financing, but also designing and assembling its own energy products in-house. All this and more in our conversation with Fiza Farhan. Please stay tuned and enjoy. The Affording Energy Podcast and the episode that you're about to hear have been made possible with generous support from the City Foundation. Fiza, thanks so much for joining us and for being our very first guest on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Chris. It's an absolute pleasure to be here, and I'm really looking forward to the conversation we'll be having in the next 1 hour.
Great. Well, let's go ahead and get started. So first, I'd like our listeners to get some background on the Buksh Foundation generally before we get right into our discussion of its clean energy program, which we'll be spending the next half an hour or so discussing in detail. One of the things that we're really interested in at ARC is how broadly or narrowly at the mission level the different microfinance institutions, you know, really define their role in society and as agents for social change, and how that may or may not predispose them towards embracing energy finance or diversifying their activities more generally beyond conventional credit. So the Buksh Foundation, it's clear to me, it's a very young organization, but it also really seems to have it at its core a beyond microfinance vision that really sees the organization as having impacts on multiple fronts and engaged in a diversity of different types of activities that are going to impact the quality of life of its clients. So I wonder if you could describe really your mandate, essentially. Tell us how it is that broad mandate really opens up a door for your support for energy or your direct involvement in energy.
Sure. The mandate was always to set up an innovative, beyond microfinance institution, which does not follow the typical brick and mortar approach of charity based NGOs that were currently existing in Pakistan, but I believe globally as well, but actually to create a financial institution for the unbanked, whereby we can provide them as a one stop shop. We can provide them with access to financing, access to business development services, access to training, access to clean energy, access to housing, transportation, water, etc. Now, with that in place, our vision had always been impact investment. We were very clear about it from day one that we're not going to be doing the typical $150 loan sizes and indebting the clients with further, multiple loaning and borrowing, etc. But we would be introducing products which actually help the client to get empowered, to get financially sustainable, and to generate economic opportunities for themselves, their communities, and hence the entire economy. Now, when we set up Buksh Foundation in 2009, we became very clear even then, three years ago, that we can start off with a typical productive loan, which we did. But with the productive loan launch, we realized that the energy situation was such in the country, and especially in the rural areas where most of our microfinance and our clients dwell, that without providing them with clean energy or alternate energy means, it is impossible for them to generate any sort of prudent economic activity. And hence, we realized that it is a need to come up with a clean energy loan for them, to come up with an opportunity for them to get not only access to finance, but access to the product, access to the technology, access to the after sales, the training. So after that, we followed a very detailed market assessment, a very detailed economics assessment of the clean energy loan that we were to introduce. And after, I believe, a year and more of detailed field work and assessment of technologies, of different strategies, business models, we came up with what we call now the clean energy movement. And it is actually, now that we are dispersing, now that the pilot has been successfully launched, I really believe that this product and this movement, the clean energy loans, are actually the real, the support behind the impact investment vision that we have. So we really understood from it was instilled in our mandate from day one. It wasn't something that came out because of, you know, a series of events or consequences. It had always been embedded in the basic foundation of Baksh Foundation, which was impact investment.
You know, one of the things that that I obviously would really like to get into is the energy crisis situation in Pakistan. Obviously, that creates obviously really dramatic consequences for your customers, but then also a huge opportunity for the Baksh Foundation to play a meaningful role in improving access. But before we get into that, tell me a little bit about your clients, your customers. If you could give us a little bit of profile of the types of livelihoods that they're engaged in, the types of enterprises, where they live, and importantly, what are their energy habits and behaviors?
Sure. Again, I would say that we're very clear about it. We're not working with the poorest of the poor. We're not working with the completely bottom of the pyramid, the less than $1 a day, because we are very clear. I will tell you, in Pakistan, 11 to 13% actually of the country is formally banked by the commercial sector. And then we have further at the bottom of the pyramid, we have a 12 to 13%, which is the bottom of the pyramid, the poorest of the poor, the people who are living on less than $1 a day. Between these two spectrums is this large market, this untapped middle market, which is actually the main economic agents of the society. Our client is that middle market. Our client is that missing middle. And we want to provide solutions to that entrepreneur to enable him to generate better means of life and living, and which will eventually trickle down and contribute to the larger economy. So our typical client would be living in the peri-urban or rural area of Punjab. We're only working in Punjab. Our 8 branches currently are serving in, 2 branches are in the peri-urban areas, very close to Lahore, where our head office operations are. And the remaining 6 are located in further rural areas. So our clients are all entrepreneurs. They are all economic agents. They either have a small enterprise or are looking to set up an enterprise. A typical entrepreneur of ours or a typical client of ours would be somebody who has a small shop in the rural areas, or somebody, a woman with a beauty parlor, a teacher who wanted some working capital to set up a small school whereby she can teach students and set up a tuition center. It would be a farmer. It would be a service provider, a rickshaw wala, the people who drive the 3-wheelers around for transportation. It is our client is the small micro entrepreneur. Our client is the productive entrepreneur on which the economy of this country relies.
So what you have clearly grasped as an organization is the key link between energy access and economic development and productivity and commercial success. I wonder if you could just very quickly sort of summarize for us, what are the consequences of the electricity crisis in Pakistan right now for your clients in terms of the overall prospects of their enterprises and their overall economic security?
Hmm. Right. Well, this is a very valid question, because that just completely lays the base for our entire efforts on the clean energy movement. I will tell you, Chris, for example, Pakistan, of course, is going through one of its worst energy crises at the moment. We have, at the larger level, at the government level, there's a huge crisis with the circulating debt. There's a huge crisis with the power plants. Even in cities, even in Lahore. Just to give you an example, today in the morning from 8 a.m. till 1 p.m., we did not have any electricity, and the entire office was running on a generator and diesel fuel. This is a common situation that people are experiencing in the city, whereby blackout hours are typically on an average of 8 to 10 in the city. Now, people in the cities, of course, have multiple means the budgets have gone exuberantly high, but they have other means of having diesel generators, putting diesel in. But now when you go to the villages, when you go further beyond the main cities, the number of blackout hours are unbelievably reaching from 20 to 22 hours in various locations as well. In 6 out of my 8 locations, the average blackout hours are between 20 and 22. In 2 out of my, the 2 of my peri-urban branches, the blackout hours are from 16 to 18. This is on average. And there are, of course, good days and there are, of course, bad days. And a good day will mean one more hour of electricity. Now, those people cannot afford alternate means like UPSs or generators or diesel fuel. What those clients then rely on are back to the Dark Ages, back to the Stone Ages, kerosene oil, candle wax, et cetera, et cetera. Now, with that in mind, these clients are not the bottom of the pyramid, as I said. They have to generate economic activity. A woman who's running a parlor or a man who's running an enterprise has to shut down as soon as the sun sets. The day is over for them. There's no economic activity happening after that because there is no electricity. Forget about the electricity in the scorching, heat of summers that Punjab experiences without a basic necessity of a fan, there is absolutely efficiency and productivity of every entrepreneur decreases drastically.
I'd like to be able to get into that, actually, because what I think that the Books Foundation has done is obviously paid an enormous amount of attention to the type of energy product or the type of energy application that it wants to advance based on its objectives of supporting business. And I think that's really one of the interesting parts of your story. So I wonder if you could actually explain to us a little bit about which products right now, and we'll get into the full story on that in terms of the role that you play on bringing those products to your clients. But if you could just paint a picture for our listeners of the energy product line that you currently offer financing for.
Sure. These products are what I call portable generators. We are offering three different types of portable generators right now. One is a portable generator with a solar charging fan. It is only for the fan. There is a pedestal fan. It must be like approximately 2 meters tall with a 16-inch diameter, good enough to give good airflow with an LED light in the rod. Then we have a portable generator with LED lights. They have LED lamps associated with this, so that's called our lighting kit. And then we have a complete solar home solution, where the portable generator has the LED lights, it has a fan, it has a mobile charging socket, it has a laptop charging socket, and you can also charge any other equipment up to 19 watts with it as well. All these kits come with the access of mobile charging as well. I must tell you that people living in most of the villages around Punjab have to travel a distance of kilometers to get to the city area to just charge their mobile. Imagine the amount of inconvenience that you have to travel by foot across kilometers to charge your mobile. And then you come back, you use it for 2 days, and the battery goes off. All these portable generators come with the product and the panel. It's very easy. It's a plug-and-play solution, extremely convenient for the clients. All they have to do is charge their panel in the sun, or they can place it in the window as well, charge their portable generators, connect their equipment to it, and use it wherever they please.
Can you tell us a little bit about the performance of these generators? Obviously, you chose solar because Pakistan has a very high level of solar irradiation. It's portable, it's modular, it's field-tested. But can you tell us a little bit about the actual performance? How many hours of lighting now do the owners of these portable generators have access to as a result of ownership? How long can they power their fans for, et cetera?
The bigger kit, this is so 6 to 8 hours is for the smaller kit, the lighting solutions and the fans kit. The complete home solution that I call, even gate takes the backup up to 12 hours, which really makes it extremely prudent for the clients because now they can run it for the entire night. It is 24-hour connectivity for them as far as they're concerned, because during the day, the products can also work with direct sunlight on the panel. And in the meantime, the panel also stores the battery backup.
Right. And it's obviously clear that your product selection, smaller types of units, solar portable lighting devices, are becoming a little bit more common when we look more globally at energy microfinance. But you've selected a product category that is very much meant to be a real grid substitute, is to really support diversity of small commercial activities of your clients. Now, the really interesting part, which we've already alluded to, is the backstory behind this. So we're referring to these products, but I think the thing that's truly exceptional about what you do is that you actually went way upstream and took on the role of actually designing and assembling these products. You've actually created these products from components that you source internationally, which is certainly not something that's common to microfinance institutions that engage in energy. So I wonder if you could give us a little bit of the background to how that came to be. How is it that you're producing your own products?
Sure. Yes, you're absolutely right, Chris. This is one of, you know, the key, I think, competitive edge that we have, fortunately, of course. We have been very lucky because we are, of course, Buxx Foundation is part of a larger group, which is Buxx Group, you know, a decades-old family business running in Pakistan. One of our sister concerns within the group is an energy company. It is a complete, full-fledged ESCO energy servicing company called Buxx Energy Private Limited. Buxx Energy Private Limited has been also set up in 2009 by, of course, no coincidence. And it is Buxx Energy is working as an ESCO and also as an off-grid solar provider to commercials, buildings, to schools, residentials. And they're even setting up a 10-megawatt demonstrative solar power plant in Pakistan, the first of its kind. So with that type of a technical partner in-house, that type of a technical, strong technical capacity and team that we had in-house, we very earlier in our pursuit of clean energy realized that I did not want to go ahead with both the typical lantern model that was happening in most parts of the world because of various reasons. One, of course, I wanted the product to, as you rightly mentioned, to be as close as possible to an off-grid solution or a grid-connected solution. It was not coming with that right output that I needed. And secondly, I did not want to go ahead with the rooftop installations for the reason that I described earlier, because I wanted to give them a mobile opportunity for being able to generate multiple impact out of the solar kits. So with Buxx Energy, then we sourced various samples, we did quality testing, we went through months of this process, whereby we then came out to this very hard, very technically strong product. For which, of course, because Buxx Energy works with only EU and World Bank certified suppliers out of China and Germany. If Buxx Foundation had been working directly with them, it would have been difficult for us to do the quality testing to be able to make sure that we had the right suppliers, because, of course, the international market is highly competitive when solar technology comes. And hence, we wanted to make sure that we're working with the right partners and we get the right after-sales support as well. So with these two requirements came in Buxx Energy, and they helped us substantially in the whole product identification phase. But after that, we came out with the product that we're currently using, which were exactly what I wanted from the microfinance perspective, understanding the needs of the clients, understanding what product will actually bring the impact we're looking to generate. And from Buxx Energy's perspective, these products came up with the right technical base, with the right supplier sitting behind it, with the right quality assurance test. Because we had to be very clear that the products that we launched this movement with had to be so concrete, because if anything goes wrong, microfinance is a field that, you know, one lantern goes out, one lamp burns out, the entire belief system of the people on technology would collapse.
Now we're really touching on some of the key issues and concerns that prevent a lot of microfinance institutions from engaging in or succeeding in energy. And you've tackled them in very interesting ways. One is that obviously, microfinance institutions are financial institutions, and so their core competence and knowledge certainly is going to be somewhat remote from how to design a portable energy device. So you were able to obviously really capitalize in your connection with your sister organization, Buxx Energy, in order to overcome that knowledge gap. But the other thing that is really, really key here, which you're mentioning, is, you know, not only are you going to, you need to design a quality product that's going to stand up in the field, but you really need to carry out the right consumer education and training at the point of sale in order to make sure that there are no problems that happen, you know, once it's been deployed. And as you just described, if there's a failed product in the field, that's going to have a ripple effect that'll spoil the whole market and can have serious impacts for portfolio quality. So I wonder if we could just shift a little bit, and you could tell us about your approach to community education and training to ensure that the quality is maintained once it's been deployed.
Oh, absolutely. See, because another reason why we call it a clean energy movement and not just a clean energy product is because we're not only giving access to finance or access to the technology alone. What we are providing to these clients is a complete 360-degree turnkey holistic solution to make sure that they absorb the technology and they understand the product and they utilize it in a very sustainable way. How we start off is with, for example, whenever I have launched this product in a new location, we do rounds of community mobilization. there are community workshops that are set up. You know, the products are set up for display, and people are announced, people are invited to come and test the products, test the technology. There are training sessions that happen in these community workshops, whereby our energy officers, they teach and they train the clients or the potential clients on what the product is, how it is used, you know, what is good for it, what is, you know, don't put it under the water, this is how it runs well, what is the battery backup time, how can you use it best for yourself. Now, with that, of course, the community gets really excited, and I've been to a couple of these myself, and it is so fascinating to see people, you know, understand solar technology. They think it's magic. They think it's complete magic that a light is, you know, being lit without any socket to it, or when the city is dark, how, when the village is entirely dark, how is this light and fan running? And after these workshops, of course, then when the interested clientele come in, they fill the forms, the due diligence happens on them. We do, with the selected clients who are being dispersed this loan, we do a one-on-one training on the product. They're shown demonstrations. You know, the energy officers are, again, responsible for training the client on the product, on the optimum utilization of the product, on how to maintain its life, what to do, what not to do. It's a whole training concept and how to use it most effectively for their own productive good. And then we also, after this whole training is imparted and the client goes home with his, you know, solar portable generator and his solution, there is still regular monitoring happening that if the client, the product is working well, there's complete after sales that we get from Baksh Energy. If anything goes wrong, we are completely responsible in replacing it with the warranty term. They get their warranty cards. And every 6 months, we do an impact assessment report and an impact assessment survey on a randomly selected sample size of our clients, whereby we go to them and we identify how well did they utilize that clean energy product, how well did they utilize the loan that we gave them, and what impact did that loan have on their life, on their income generation, on their, you know, the childhood education levels, their general quality of life. So in those impact assessment reports, which are biannual publications, these results are very evident that how this whole turnkey solution works as compared to just handing out the product and telling them to go home. You know, it has to be completely based on understanding, and training is very critical.
So there's a lot to sort of deal with there. One thing just to clarify is that so Baksh Energy is really operative at opposite ends of the value chain there, it seems, or the supply chain, that they're involved in the actual development of the design of the product, the sourcing of the component from certified vendors in China. But then they also play that key, absolutely critical role of actually supporting you for after-sales service. So you have that to rely upon. So that's obviously set you apart from a lot of MFIs that engage and that are experimenting.
Absolutely,
with
absolutely. After sales in this business is absolutely critical, and we do understand completely that it's not only purely microfinance. It is microfinance and technology combined in a very unique and a very empowering way. So it has to give it the best of both worlds.
Yeah, and I think that you know, I'm gonna leave the finance part to last, which is kind of telling, because you know, when we look at microfinance institutions, there's many different ways in which microfinance institutions can engage in energy, and that really depends on. Really, in the local environment and the local conditions, and we sometimes talk about it in the sense of a spectrum that from narrow to broad involvement. So an MFI might just be in a situation where they're offering finance and they work with a competent, high capacity energy partner who does the rest. You guys are certainly on the opposite end of that spectrum, in that your fingerprints are all over the supply chain. You really seem to have built it almost from scratch. And that, again, goes all the way up to product development, which is quite unique within the context of energy and microfinance globally. Now, one little operational point that I'd love you to elaborate on a little bit, which I find interesting. You know, we always like to look at how is it that microfinance institutions, you know, incorporate energy into their operations, because energy is different. It is different, obviously, than just dealing with conventional financial products. You had mentioned that the staff person or position called an energy officer. So can you tell me a little bit about the energy officer's responsibility? What's the full gamut of their responsibilities, and how are they different from sort of, I guess, regular staff?
Absolutely, absolutely. Loan officers who look after the energy portfolio, the loan officers who look after the clean energy clients are called energy officers, and they are trained upon hiring not only on the microfinance part of the business, not only on how we do the due diligence, how we fill forms up, how we do recoveries, etc., but also on the technical part of the product. So Bucks Energy's technical team trains our energy officers and makes them completely equipped with the technical understanding of the product, with the after-sales evaluation of the product, with testing the product, rectifying small disorders if they occur in the product, and for them to be able to train the clients in how to use the product and how to optimize the usage of the product, how the current flows. You know, clients have the most interesting questions. They want to understand everything, how the current flows in the wire, which wire is connected to which socket, what happens after that. So the energy officer is completely equipped in the complete technical understanding of the product itself to be able to impart that training to the clients. And hence we have the loan officers basically who are looking after the clean energy portfolio within the field are hence called energy officers who look after the microfinance and the technical aspect of this product line.
And that's an interesting choice that you've made. And we see different varieties of it in other contexts where you're really concentrating the entire all the different responsibilities with one staff member, rather than having a technician that is on call or available at the branch level who works with regular loan officers. And it sounds like a small point, but I'm sure you would agree that it's a big deal in terms of how you look at how you're going to really incorporate your staff into this, because we find that there's often a lot of resistance sometimes at the branch level or at the loan officer level, if they are sort of suddenly, you know, if they need to take on this really other kind of program area. So are you finding that by creating this one officer who does everything, you're avoiding some of those issues and you're making sort of the incentives and responsibilities very clear?
Well, I must tell you something here, Chris, that this product and this product line has actually, it is like the cherry tree of the entire foundation, right? It is like the product that everybody is very proud of. So actually, when we had to choose who to make and convert into an energy officer from the existing loan officers we had, we did this initial assessment and everybody was eager to be taken up. It was like a promotion for them. It was like, it was a privilege for them to be taken up and assigned the energy officer. And another thing I must tell you is that we usually don't have, the client loan size is going out. The loan officers are not allowed to take the productive loan. But for the clean energy loan, there are lots of loan officers who had applied for a similar generator for their own household. So it is. They are the users of the product as well. Of course, they live in the same area. They live in the same community. They face the same problems, and they have also taken this product up themselves. So they're also brand ambassadors of the product, and they very proudly market it to their relatives, to their neighbors, to the entire community to get more and more clientele.
So let me ask, there's a couple things that came up in your last couple statements that I wanted you to just to elaborate on before we wrap up. One is that, you know, you mentioned that you had borrowed the energy officer model from something that you had seen Hasbank in Mongolia do. And it, as it turns out, actually, Hasbank is one of the organizations that we've created a case study for, which can be downloaded on the ARC Finance website. I'll put it in the program notes for this podcast. But I'm also interested, too, and this is always something that we find fascinating. Where else did you look? What were some of your other reference points when Buksha Energy a few years ago decided that it wanted to do an energy program? What other programs internationally did you look to that helped inform your approach?
Well, of course, no clean energy movement talk in microfinance can go without the Grameen model. That was certainly this all happened back in 2010 with the IFC coming in, and they were sponsoring they sponsored lots of NGOs and MFIs and MFBs to go to Hasbank and to go to Grameen to understand their models of exposure visits. But the Grameen model was, of course, fascinating. However, that was something that I certainly looked at with the whole woman entrepreneur thing happening. They had after sales taken care of. The only thing that I knew would not maybe work here at this point was the rooftop installation, because of my own understanding that I wanted to give them a mobile product. I did not want to limit them with only, a panel on the rooftop, be it their house or be it their enterprise. If it's at their enterprise, when the enterprise closes, they can't take it to their house. If it's on their house, they cannot use it in their enterprise. So, but of course, it was a green learning model in terms of the scalability they have achieved. And on the Hasbank model, these were the two models that we primarily learned from in our initial days. The Hasbank model was, of course.
Right. I would say with the with Grameen Shakti, which you're referring to, the incredibly successful solar financing program in Bangladesh, which is, I think now Grameen Shakti alone is over 1 million installations. There is obviously the major difference is they had the benefit of a very sort of wraparound public subsidy program that obviously you weren't able to benefit from. But it does seem like you took maybe somewhat of a page from their book that they, like you, decided that they needed to take over the energy operations part. They needed to be really responsible for the products. They're installing solar home systems, but you're dealing with retail products. But there is a similarity there that I see that your involvement is such that you, because of Buksh Energy, you actually were able to incorporate some very technical things there that often are left to an independent or a separate technology partner. So I guess that's one similarity. But one thing that's really interesting to me that when you and I have discussed this before that if you could talk about is that you realized very early on, I think, that you wanted to have real independence doing this. And that's one of the reasons why you took on the technical part is because you didn't want to be left sort of to the exigencies of shifts in the market and of other product price changes and supply stuff. Could you tell us a little bit about that goal or that objective of really gaining independence and why that was important for you?
Absolutely. Well, one main reason for that was that the local companies present in solar technology in Pakistan right now are, unfortunately, there's no local manufacturing happening, as you must know. The local importers that are present, there are, the quality testing for them, for the quality assurance, the warranty is a major question. It is a very informal market. There are no market linkages established. There's no after-sales warranty, long-term, sustainability. And that is why Buksh Energy also made a decision to only work with internationally accredited European and World Bank, European Union and World Bank suppliers out of China and Germany. Now, with that in mind, I did not want to, one, go ahead with any local suppliers because of the quality issue. As I mentioned earlier, that the quality of the product is critical in this whole movement because we want to make sure that we're giving the best product to our clients and it overperforms what we commit to them rather than any chances of underperforming. Secondly, we wanted to make sure that as far as service is concerned, we are completely independent and the client can rely on us. And it has to be in control because mostly what happens in the commercial sector as well is that people have gotten, an execution or two of solar off-grid for their house or something. But then once the deal is done, when the panels are up on the roof and things are working fine, if after 6 months things go wrong, there's absolutely nobody to get back to. So because the entire solar market of Pakistan is still not very formally developed, we wanted to make sure that we have our own people to confide in, our own teams to confide in, and work with the complete quality tests done.
Right. Now, Fizza, let's go ahead and last but not least, let's actually talk about the end user finance part of the program. And I hope we've given our listeners a real sense that, as you've told me before, this is not just about finance. So we've already given a sense of really the range of the activities that you're directly engaged in order to make really energy accessible to your clients. But let's now talk a little bit about the loan component of this here. What type of loan product is it and how is it designed? What are the terms and the interest rate? If you could just give us a little sketch of that.
Sure. Well, what we're doing right now is that for the smaller kit, for the smaller fan and the smaller kit, which is approximately 10,500 Pakistani rupees, that would be, under $118, $115. We're doing multiple options of 6 to 9 months as well for repayments to make it flexible to our clients. And for the largest home size, the complete solar home solution, which is approximately, again, I would say in dollar value, it would be $400, which includes the solar portable generator, the fans, the LED lights, the laptop charging, the mobile charging. That is going out on installment packages of 9 and 12 months. The maximum cap is at 12 months because after that, of course, it becomes, the installment amounts become too small. And again, these packages were also designed after complete market assessment and market surveys to ensure that what they're paying us back in installments is one, offsetting what they're currently spending on informal fuel and kerosene oil. And secondly, they are able to generate that amount from the additional hours of income that they're now generating rather than their existing income.
So your customers are immediately in black, essentially, from the get-go. They're generating income that exceeds whatever their loan repayments are.
Oh, absolutely, right. Completely.
Now, do you
additional income? I would
additional income, right? Now, one of the when in our dealings with microfinance institutions that are considering energy or not considering energy, one of the concerns that's frequently raised, obviously, is the risk that they perceive that surrounds energy, and a lot of that has to do with, the lack of certainty about the technology itself and whether or not it'll fail in the field. You have obviously tried to cover all bases in that regard in terms of the actual product design and very rigorous after-sales service. But the other part of it also has to do with the client and seeing that there's some risk in actually, the device going missing or being sold or something like that. How do you mitigate against that potential risk through your actual program design?
Yeah, completely. No, I completely agree with you. This is something that is currently what we're looking at. In the pilot, we did not have any options for insurance right now because, again, as we are developing the awareness for the clients, as we're developing the awareness for the investors, as we're developing the awareness for the whole movement, I would say, we are also working with some insurance companies to come in with solutions to be able to insure this product. Just like our transportation loan, our two-wheelers and our three-wheeler rickshaws are completely insured so that in case of, accident or if they're stolen or if they go missing or whatever, the insurance company completely pays for the insurance. We want to create a similar model here as well. That is one missing arm right now, which is not in implementation, but we are working on it. And hopefully soon we will be able to add the insurance arm as well, because this is certainly a question that we have for ourselves too. But they're very excited to do that too. Everybody somehow is very pro-energy these days, especially in Pakistan. So we're putting that up.
In terms of also just something that seems to be more within your control, and which clients are eligible for energy loans? Is a brand new client eligible for it, or is there they have to demonstrate a certain repayment history? How does that work?
Well, for now, what we're doing is for the pilot, of course, we started on with our existing clients, and the clients that were had completed our loan cycles very, very successfully, the clients that had a good history. And had a good working relationship with the loan officers and the foundation. So as a further incentive to them, we've started working with them, but we're also working with new clients as well. And as we scale up, we would, of course, be preferring our existing clients and the ones who've completed their productive loan cycles successfully with 100% recovery rate. But that again is 99.6% of our entire client base. But we're, of course, giving it to new clients as well. However, there is a complete business feasibility assessment, which is part of our regular due diligence, to ensure that the client is going to utilize the product or the cash in the case of productive loan for some productive means and not just for consumption.
And you also, I believe you just said this, but the loans are not given in cash. There's no point in which cash is received for it. They get the product directly and then they repay, which is obviously you're closing another gap or another possibility for money to be spent in a different way.
Absolutely. And we're not only closing the gap for the money to be spent in any other way, but also we're closing the gap for them to be not fooled by these, roadside solar shops that are prevailing, and they don't get any low-quality, subsidized solar product which fails in a week after they buy it.
Right.
So we want to, and of course, that will lead to major defaults because they will not be able to repay the money back. So the clean energy loans are only in kind. There's no cash involved. That's one, of course, mitigation strategy as well.
I think I would like to close, it seems appropriate to close with a little bit of discussion of the impacts that you've observed. You've obviously talked about it throughout this conversation, but I know that you guys have actually tried to quantify it to a certain degree as well recently. So I'd like to hear that. And then obviously, if you could just tell us a little bit about the Fuller movement. You use that term instead of program. You talk about an energy movement. You've alluded to it already a couple of times. Now, I would say just the Herculean effort that you put in to make energy work just for the credit program constitutes a movement in and of itself. But I understand as well that the Buchs Foundation is involved in a couple of other parallel energy programs to reach other segments of Pakistani society. So I wonder if we could just go over those two. So why don't we go ahead and start? Just tell us a little bit about what you're actually seeing quantitatively in terms of impact, in terms of savings and the real sort of benefits to the enterprises that you're actually seeing in your studies.
Right. Well, Chris, I must say that the impact of the clean energy loans, just like any other solar installation, is multifaceted. It is, of course, not only in terms of the clean energy and the environmentally friendly solution that they're getting now and not burning their kerosene and emitting carbon, but it is also on their financial aspect. The impact is huge. The entrepreneur, of course, who was earlier working for X number of hours till sunset, is now working for X plus 5 number of hours and generating additional hours of income. They're then being able to, for example, fishermen. We have a few clients who are fishermen. And when the fishermen have to go out for the fishing time is in at near midnight or sometime like that, whereby they go to the fish with their kerosene lamps, and the kerosene lamps would burn out because of the wind. Now, with these solar kits, they can easily go and fish, they produce, they can get more fish out and hence generate more income. The social impact, of course, is there, like any other energy movement. They can use the same, instead of using kerosene oil, they can use their lanterns and their lamps now for cooking purposes, for education purposes. So there are multiple benefits of the and multiple impact of the product, as I said earlier. But what we realize on our end is that to generate the larger impact that we aim to achieve, and you know, and taking this impact out to thousands and millions of households in the near future, the microcredit alone might, you know, might not be able to suffice for the vast need. One, primarily because of the challenge of raising the funds for providing the right scaling of activities for microcredit. The other opportunity we realized in this interim period for creating impact in through clean energy was to get involved in projects, in clean energy-related projects. One of these projects is with the Lighting a Billion Lights project in India, in partnership with an Indian organization called TERI. And we have signed a mandate with them for LAML, we call it. It's Lighting a Million Lives through a very simple solar electrification of villages concept. It is a donor-funded project with multiple donors associated with it, be it individuals, corporations, banks, etc. And we have already started the project. The first two villages are getting enlightened on the 10th of September. And these villages are completely unelectrified. So now you're talking about those areas of Punjab or Pakistan whereby the national grid has never even reached. So now you're talking about the poorest of the poor and the completely, you know, underprivileged people, the completely out-of-scope people as far as electricity is concerned. They have never experienced electricity in their lives. And the first two villages will be coming up on 10th September, post which we are looking to convert 4,000 villages in the next 3 years. Achieving our target of a million lives. So that is one project. Then we're doing another project with PepsiCo International in Pakistan, whereby we're looking to set up water filtration plants run on solar in the communities that Pepsi serves. So under, you know, we're trying to link up various partnerships with best practices, various partnerships with the corporate sector, with FMCGs, to come up with very innovative models for upscaling impact as far as clean energy projects are concerned. And these two are the first of its kind. Together with such projects and our microcredit movement, I'm sure in the coming years, we would be creating and generating a lot more scalable impact through clean energy.
Fizzy, you've just talked about how your own programs as an organization are expanding beyond your microcredit program, which we spent most of the time talking about. Now you're engaged in a program with Terry that's meant to reach a much, I guess you could say, sort of further off grid, lower in the base of the pyramid population. But I'm wondering, actually, you know, you said that energy is obviously becoming quite a big deal in Pakistan. You know, obviously it's an urgent concern, the escalating crisis. But I'm wondering if you're seeing that your efforts in Pakistan as an MFI that's really driving energy access, do you see any room or possibility for replication by other microfinance institutions? What do you think that the larger role of the broader microfinance sector within Pakistan is in terms of really furthering energy access for their clients?
Well, Chris, you know, as much as I would, you know, be positive about it and be very, very optimistic, that because as far as this space is concerned, I really don't feel there's any competition or there's any competitive edge. There's just no competition. It is 57% of the population of a 180 million resident country, and hence we all have a lot of to do in our lifetime. So there's no competition at all. But unfortunately, I have not yet in my interactions on various joint forums seen this vision coming up as a mainstream product in other microfinance institutions. I would primarily owe that to the lack of the technological understanding and to the lack of the opportunity that we had of having the sister concern in-house who was a technical expert. However, one positive thing is that the regulator, the State Bank of Pakistan, and in support with Pakistan Microfinance Network, are positively and actively thinking about clean energy to become a mainstream of microfinance. And I've had lots of discussions with the officials at the State Bank, especially the governor, the new governor of State Bank, Mr. Yasin. He's very, very personally very active in the role of microfinance, and he understands the impact that enhancing microfinance can do and enhancing clean energy within microfinance can do. So I believe with the regulators coming in, and Pakistan, of course, is a country blessed with an excellent regulatory framework of microfinance, with them coming in and introducing some supportive policies, introducing some supportive mechanisms, which can link microfinance and the technology arm much more prudently in a way in which we succeeded doing it in-house, I think that will really give the edge, or a subsidy maybe, that would give an edge to the microfinance industry at large to be able to incorporate the clean energy product into the mainstream. But as for now, there's a large need for people to address this issue and to come in it. We have been approached by some institutions to come and pay an exposure visit to our and to learn about our model, to see our clients, to interact with them. So I think the news is getting out there. I would say that the news is certainly getting out there. But one major challenge is the investors' hesitation and limitation in supporting initial activities. Now, many of the investors that I've been approaching earlier for a debt line or a credit line or a fund to support this program have always come back to me stating that they would wait for a substantial number to be achieved before they can come in. Now, if everybody thinks like that, the substantial number would be difficult to achieve. But if investors just separate a little pool for that substantial number, it would be easy to do because the business model is now set up. So that would certainly stir a movement in clean energy in the future, I'm sure.
And just to underscore your point, you know, in the global scale, you know, that's the similar type of chicken and egg situation, you know, it really depends on the work of the Buchs Foundations and the other microfinance institutions that really commit to this to really show that it's actually viable and can be done, and that microfinance institutions have a really important role to play. So again, we really look forward to following your success and learning as you learn as you continue to grow. And certainly we'll have you on a future podcast. I think as a close though, I think would be great is if you could just tell us a tiny bit about what are your goals over the next year or two in terms of what do you expect your energy credit program to look like this time next year or let's say, you know, 2 years from now?
Well, sure, Chris. You know, as I said, the last year was, of course, very difficult in putting together the entire business methodology and working the products out. Now we're at a place where the team has also completely gained belief in the entire methodology of clean energy loans. And we've realized that we're doing the right thing. You know, of course, there was a few hesitation in the beginning because we were just taking the first steps in all directions altogether. But now all those steps have consolidated into a very strong business methodology. And we are very positive towards the scale we look to achieve. As far as the microcredit targets are concerned, I'm looking to at least reach up to 4,000 customers in the coming 2 years at maximum and impacting all those families and entrepreneurs. And as far as the Lighting a Million Life project is concerned, we have a total target of 4,000 villages for 3 years. Which is already gaining pace and momentum. The media is being very, very supportive of this movement as well. And that's strongly helping us in reaching momentum and a larger audience. So I believe up till, you know, for example, in the next year, we should be looking at impacting at least 5,000 households with clean energy products one way or the other, either through microfinance or through the energy movement in terms of the Lighting a Million Lights project.
Okay.
So, yes, I'm very, very positive about what we can be achieving, and I hope, you know, we get back to you with very positive updates.
Well, we'll definitely be following your progress. And so, Faiza, what's the best way for our listeners to find out more? Is there information on the website about the energy program, or is there someone that we should direct them to?
Absolutely, yes. Well, there's information on the website. The website is www.bukshfoundation.org. And you can always contact, feel free to contact me, of course, as well. My email address is fiza@bukshfoundation.org. Or you can shoot an email on the info address with the same hyperlink. I would be very happy to be in touch and, you know, provide any sort of information, learning, partnership avenues, because I really believe that to take up the scale that we're looking to achieve, we need support from everybody, be it advisory, be it, you know, a talk with yourselves, be it putting the word out, be it funds, whatever it may be. We all need to join hands together to take this movement up positively.
Yeah, I mean, that's a perfect note to add on. I mean, I think that the future of energy finance by microfinance institutions really so much depends on a constant conversation between those institutions and actors that are really, you know, sort of pushing the horizon and that are really experimenting with new things. So what we hope to do through this podcast, and this being our very first episode, is to really kind of try to help push that conversation forward. So, Faiza, I really want to wish you the best of luck and thank you for all your insights into how your program's going. And again, we'll keep in touch.
Absolutely, Chris. Thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure, and I wish you all the best with your endeavors.
Thank you very much.
I hope you've enjoyed this first installment of the new ARC Finance Affording Energy podcast. To listen to future episodes and to find out more about ARC Finance's global projects, please visit us at www.arcfinance.org.